This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Hear some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if they don't, their careers aren't lasting that long. And you can always get distracted by a lot of different things. And obviously it's been a rough go, and you know, there's been a lot of criticism. I mean, just, we all know what social media can be like. We all know how cruel and ugly people can be when they're hiding behind a keyboard and a computer screen, because we've all heard it. We've all taken it. And you know, imagine the magnitude for him. So to see him just find that joy, that passion, that smile, that free flowing, you hope it continues. And you know, he's the one who has to control that. In the end, I hope he understands it's just basketball. Yes, it's your career, but in the end, it does not define everything about you. You can write that chapter yourself as a world-class, you know, top 20 in the world basketball player, but that plays the game in a way that brings joy to everybody, so you should feel that joy too.
Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
Guys, have a great weekend.
That is Eric Haston. Again, Grizzlies and Knicks tomorrow night right here on 92.9 FM ESPN at 7 p.m. All right, Cobb, we got big guys running 40s out in Indy right now, so there's nothing quite like, we got guys in shorts, and we're now, I guess, where it feels like spandex, and we're watching him run, and it's totally normal.
Well, I'm just shook right now because amidst our conversation with Eric, I looked up the Gene Hackman details.
Yeah.
What?
Not good.
What?
Now it's been, yeah, everyone initially was thinking carbon monoxide poisoning, and now TMZ's gotten the police report that it's at least being investigated as suspicious.
That's too bad. Hoosiers, man. Oh, and what a pool, man. Avery Tolar from the firm. Look at Eric, man. I knew he was going to mention he was in the firm, but I was like, dang, he even pulled the character's name, Avery Tolar. He was like the mentor for Mitch McDear, you know?
And then, nice.
Anyway, it ended up being a whole situation there with the mafia after Mitch. But Mitch got out, and actually John Grisham wrote a sequel book called The Exchange where Mitch McDear comes back. I don't know if you've read it yet, but The Exchange, put it on your list.
Well, like Grisham books, I felt like in the 90s, like you were getting a movie out of them every 2 months. All right,
I wish we still did.
I know. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the list. We got news from the NFL, including perhaps reimagining overtime. We'll talk about that. Jason Smith also going to join us next hour. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. If you're thinking about getting engaged, go see my friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, because the RIJ way makes it the number one place to buy your engagement ring. What's the RIJ way? It's the way that gets you more choices. They have an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They can even make designing your custom engagement ring risk-free and easy. You can have peace of mind with the meant-to-be guarantee. All you gotta do is buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and if you're unhappy for any reason, you have a full 365 days to return it. You can also have it your way at both Burger King and Robert Irwin Jewelers. Every designer diamond engagement ring mounting at RIJ is fully customizable to accommodate the center diamond size and shape of your choice. Plus, you can choose from yellow, white, or rose gold. If you can dream it, Robert Irwin Jewelers can make it come to life. They can even make an engagement ring from something as simple as a picture, a drawing, or even a dream that you had. Also, you get free ring sizing for life at Robert Irwin Jewelers, as well as free jewelry spa service. You can ask her now and pay later with financing like 24 months deferred interest, or you can take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Robert Irwin Jewelers has over 4 decades of experience in the jewelry business, and they have become a trusted name known for providing treasures for generations of families here in the Memphis area. Visit the Diamond Showroom on Perkins, the store in South Haven off Goodman Road, or the one in the Bartlett Town Center. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. Let's get in the list. All right, Cobb, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because we discussed it yesterday. Or maybe it was Tuesday. What day did North Carolina hire Jim Tanner?
They announced it Tuesday, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we discussed... because I discussed it with Tim Murray. So, number one, there's a couple of things that are interesting. Also, Oklahoma yesterday hires Jim Nagy, former director of the Senior Bowl. What I find interesting is that the college football programs are still going in the GM department. They're going like personnel people. Like guys that would be in the personnel department... scouting, roster management, all that. But what I find interesting about college basketball, we see Jim Tanner, super agent. He's getting the Carolina job. New Orleans, which I think was maybe one of the greatest tell-your-stories of all time, story comes out that 4 of their players are under investigation for shady results and ties to gambling. And then they announce Master P. But Master P is a big-time businessman, deal maker, marketing, all of that. It feels to me like the new trend in college basketball is we're going to deal makers, whereas college football is still going to kind of stick with, all right, the personnel department.
Yeah, because you got to have guys who can make the deal when, I mean, look at Memphis and the Tyreek Smith situation. You need somebody who can help you avoid that. The reality is these assistant coaches are dangling dollar figures. They don't know how much their collective is going to have. They don't know how much their AD is going to give them in revenue sharing, but they're out there recruiting guys, I can guarantee you this, Jeffrey, right now, who in 2 weeks are going to enter the portal, who aren't in the portal yet, but right now those players' agents are talking to assistant coaches. Why do we have assistant coaches negotiating contracts and throwing out dollar figures when they don't even have access to the budget or the bank themselves? So I think that's why we're seeing that, why we're going to see a Jim Tanner, an agent who has Desmond Bain and Jared Allen and 40 past first round draft picks on his resume. That's why you're seeing guys like that hire, because they can make the deal for a finite dollar figure and keep the coaches from having to deal with all of the crap of having 75 different agents texting their phone while they're trying to game plan for an NCAA tournament game.
Do you have any problems with because my thing is, even if they announce that Jim Tanner is stepping away from his agent duties. Number one, does any of us really believe that Jim Tanner's going to let his own company that he started, that all of a sudden he's really stepping away? Like, no, thank you. Do you have a problem with an agent in that role? Because it does feel like, it's like, I don't know exactly what the conflict of interest is, but it's like, I know there is one.
Yeah, right. So he could easily use his position as North Carolina's general manager to sink his teeth into the next generation of players. I mean, even if he negotiates with a college agent, okay, let's say this. He negotiates with a college agent, hey, you steer your guy to my school, whatever, I'll rep him in the pros. You know, I don't know. I mean, there could be conflicts of interest there for sure. It's his own company. I'm with you. He's not going to give up his own company and two $20-plus million NBA contracts and Jared Allen and Desmond Bane to go make about a mil as the UNC GM, which is a position that might not last. Like, what if he doesn't do a good job? What if somebody, what if the AD says you're not cutting it, or the next head coach after Hubert Davis says we don't need you, right? Like, but what's interesting to me is the amount of autonomy and the amount of power that it seems like Jim Tanner is going to have. I think that's what's so revolutionary or new about his hiring, is that they're actually going to give him the keys to the car to a certain extent. Now, I'm sure it'll be a conversation between him and Hubert Davis about certain certain players because Jim Tanner's never assembled a roster. But he's being hired at a time when Hubert Davis has very little leverage and very little power, because outside of some changes to satisfy the boosters, I mean, he would be on very thin ice right now, and this is one of those changes. So,
and
to a certain extent,
Hubert's got
an answer to him, you know?
Didn't he sign like the number two kid? I know BYU got the number one guy. I Hurd was telling me that he signed a guy that kind of got the fan base a little off his back.
Yeah, well, that'll help. But that's the other thing.
Does that help anymore? I think once upon a time, like, it did because you were selling hope. Now, I feel like we don't even know like what the value of a high school recruit is anymore. To think about like what we were talking about at the start of the show. Trey Johnson is awesome to watch. He's going to be a lottery pick. He's awesome for Texas.
And Rodney Terry still might get fired.
Right. But now, this is the other thing, though, I'm interested to see. Because I know you've written about it this week. GP, Norlander, and y'all assembled the hot list and the hot seat list for college basketball. What we saw in college football this year, though, was a lot of schools that normally not afraid to pull the trigger. Everyone was afraid to pull the trigger, including SEC schools. I'm curious to see, are we going to see basketball get treated the same way?
Well, you had 14 high major coaching changes last cycle. Now, a couple of those were the result of other jobs coming open.
It's funny because you mentioned that. We talked about this on Tuesday. It was kind of the great landing, the year of the landing spot. I believe it triggers with Enfield, right? Enfield had had enough of USC, wanted to reset the clock, goes to SMU. That opens up a California job. Musselman, who never afraid to stay a place, not enough time. He bails, goes there. Shout out last night to USC. I had USC money line. After being down like 20-something, they climbed all the way back just to lose in the last minute, and I stayed up to watch that. That was a delight. But Musselman takes that. That opens up Arkansas, and Calipari decides, all right, no more kicking around old Cal anymore, goes to Arkansas. I am kind of curious if maybe that situation could happen again, because I have no reporting on this. I just listen to what Mick Cronin's saying right now, and I just wonder, it's like, is he looking for a spot? And I know that y'all wrote about, it's $16 million to buy him out before April 1, and it's $10 million after April 1. Like, I just wonder if, like, we'll see more of the people looking to reset the old clock.
So, for example, if Indiana were to hire Buzz Williams,
yep.
Well, Texas A&M likes it. Itself a big fish. They like to make a splash. They go and hire somebody from another high major league, and then that team's got to hire somebody else. But there are some of these guys who the situation is now. I'll give you a couple examples. You got Ben Johnson, who is in year four at Minnesota, has yet to make the NCAA tournament. Is that a product of him being a bad coach? I think a lot of people in the industry would tell you no. It's actually a product of the fact that he couldn't keep his roster together after last season, lost his point guard to Texas Tech, because they couldn't afford to pay him. Porter Mosier, last night, he got obliterated by Otega Owe at Kentucky. Guess where Otega Owe played last year? At Oklahoma. You don't think Porter Mosier wanted to keep Otega Owe? Why couldn't he? It's because of the money. And so what we saw at LSU could be, to your point, what we see elsewhere in the country, where LSU, through back channels, has signaled, we're going to keep Matt McMahon. We know he's not going to make the NCAA tournament. He's going to be 0-3. On making the NCAA tournament, which under normal circumstances might warrant a firing at an SEC school. But we're going to keep him, and we're going to arm him with more NIL so that he can actually go out there and put together a competitive roster. So that's the alternative now, and that's how you sell it to your fans. It's not, well, we're broke, we don't want to pay his buyout, and we're kind of okay with being mediocre because we care more about football. No, that's not the message you want to send. It's, well, we'll see what we're going to do now. We believe in this coach, and we're going to empower him with the NIL resources with your help. So, you know, dial 1-800-blah-blah-blah to donate. Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's the path that we're going to see with a lot of these jobs that under the old way of thinking might have come open this year.
Has it surprised you that Micah Shrewsbury has struggled at Notre Dame? Because, like, I was wondering this last night. It's like, man, if you can win at Penn State, it feels like it'd be a lot easier to win at Notre Dame. But then like, I started wondering, was like, it feels like Notre Dame's leveled up a little bit in football, wouldn't you agree? Like, it's always been a good job, but it feels like now, like, you can reasonably consider, like, all right, this is an elite job again. And, like, I just found myself wondering, like, is maybe that a byproduct? Like, hey, they leveled up in football, and so basketball's going to be harder to do.
Man, I think you got to pick. I think you got to pick, especially, you know, like, Notre Dame.
unless you're Tennessee.
Tennessee, whatever, Florida. I mean, some of these SEC and Big Ten schools, they don't have to pick. Like, I mean, they got enough money to go around.
Well, I mean, actually, I think a lot of SEC schools are. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, Ole Miss and Mississippi State were, like, the standard in baseball for 30 years. Now, they're not. You know what I mean? Like, and Ole Miss has, like, made the decision. Like, they want to level up in football. They want to level up in basketball. It's like, it shouldn't shock people that in baseball, they're not leveling up.
So, on the GM topic, do you think Memphis needs one for its basketball program?
It's interesting. Because you can make an argument, is there anyone more high profile that you could have than Penny?
That's my thing on it. I think Penny, I think he is a GM. That's his strength, I think.
Because, I mean, we obviously had the jokes yesterday after Master P got signed at UNO. There were the jokes of, like, okay, is 3-6 going to be the GMs here? Project Pat, like, whatnot. But it's like, y'all, Penny's probably a bigger star than all of them.
Right. I absolutely. So the player acquisition, he's great at it. Putting together a schedule. I mean, if there was ever such a thing as a true front office executive in college basketball, I mean, that's what he is great at. I think he's better at that than he is at the X's and O's.
Honestly.
I think if anything, like, hey, he could pull a Brad Stevens at the college level and say, you know, I'm going to go slide into the GM. We're going to hire a coach to run the practices. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that would work for Memphis.
Honestly, though, like, if you're telling me, okay, they need to hire a GM, I would actually say they should do a football thing. Like, have somebody, a personnel guy.
Mm.
And have, like, make sure the roster makes sense. But, like, you know, you and I have talked about this. Part of the reason why I think it's so important that they've had a good year this year is this is the first time Penny's tried to do it the traditional manner, in which I've got a clear pecking order. I've got a roster that makes sense. I'm trying it y'all's way, and it's working.
But you look at the Tyreek Smith situation. You look at the Naquan Tomlin situation last season. He could benefit, I think, to a certain extent from having the negotiator.
I think that's fair, but I also think Memphis is in a position where this is where I think an under-discussed part about the conference, everyone focuses on the schedule, and do not get me wrong, I'm not defending that schedule. But I think an underrated part of the conference is it's really hard to get players. And to get players to come here, you probably have to overpay, so you're not negotiating from a position of strength. Because if players have the option of going to the SEC or the Big Ten, like, all things being equal, they're going to go do that.
Yeah, no, that's the sad part, the sad reality. You remember 5-6 years ago when the G League Ignite program started,
yeah,
and Mick Cronin, Penny Hardaway, some of these other coaches were out here saying, college basketball needs to empower us to keep some of the top talent in the sport from going and pursuing professional alternatives. If we want to have big-name players playing college basketball, we need some weapons in our toolkit here. That actually, in the long run, I don't think helps Memphis, because who it benefits the most in the NIL era is the programs with huge bags. Now, Fred Smith has a large bag that he's been very generous with, so it's not as if Memphis operates from a position of weakness, especially not within the AAC, but is Memphis positioned to spend among the top 20 programs in college basketball? No, I kind of doubt it. And
I mean, I'll tell you this,
to NIL,
so the
Penny's cachet was like top five. I mean, he was landing literally the number one player in the country, James Wiseman.
Well, like, you
personal
hear
relationship and all, but still, I mean, he was recruiting Jalen Duren and, you know, Musa Cisse and other guys who
hadn't
necessarily been their coach.
Well, again, who knows what numbers to believe? But the numbers that I kept hearing was this roster was roughly, give or take, 3 million or north, like, you know, somewhere in that 3 to 3.5 million. Guys, to put that in perspective, I mean, Cobb, what the average SEC roster right now is 5 million?
Yeah, it's going that way.
Like,
And that's going to be easy for the SEC schools to maintain and continue to bankroll in the rev sharing era. I don't know. I mean, we've heard from Ed Scott. I know he's been on the air a lot. I mean, has he said to what extent, you know, Memphis is going to be in on that rev sharing? Are they going to be up near, you know, where those SEC schools are?
He has said that they are participating. To what level? I mean, I think that's kind of the other thing. I don't know how many people are actually following along. Cobb, I am not convinced this house settlement is going through in next month.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of entanglements at the moment.
And first off, even if it goes through, it's just a matter of time until it goes to court, because essentially what they're trying to do is they're trying to put a cap, and it hasn't been bargained. It hasn't been negotiated. Like, that's not going to fly.
Well, at least they walk back the guidance on the Title IX stuff.
So, yeah, I always thought that was going to happen. That, to me, that whole thing screamed of outgoing administration, we're going to have a nice PR win going out.
Yeah, the Doge seems to have done away with a lot of that stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah, that they're even thinking about doing away with the Department of Education. So, yes, that seems to be going a certain way. Quickly, the NFL. All right, Kyle, we got a couple of rule changes. Number one, it's official. Pour one out. We've got electronic first downs. And this also proves to me my brain was right all along. This idea, when I would start reading these stories about, listen, the technology's close, but it's not there. The technology was there. They didn't want to pay for it. There's owners that were cheap and didn't want to pay for it to do it. Now they're doing it. Like, all this, what has changed technologically in 3 weeks?
It can't be that expensive, can it, to electronically spot the Cobb, football?
Do you realize this? This is an underrated one of the NFL. So there are some stadiums in the NFL that have cameras positioned down the boundary, so down the sidelines. You're not allowed to use that angle in replay because not every stadium has it, because owners didn't want to pay for that. That is, like, never doubt the cheapness of some owners.
That's wild.
So, like, always keep that in mind. Now, it's insane that a league that makes that kind of revenue is not sitting there going, all right, we're all putting these in. Like, we're just, as a league, we're putting this in. But we are going to have electronic spotting the football. The chain gain will remain on the sideline as a backup. It seems to me, though, like, the backup only you only use the backup if the system's not working. Like, going good old we see this all the time in high school football. When the play clocks go out and you got to go to the back judge who puts his hand up at 10 seconds for the play clock and then he counts it down at 5. It seems like if it goes out, then we have the chain gang. But it feels to me we are losing one of the great moments in sports, which is the we got to have a measurement.
It makes me wonder, are we in baseball, as we get closer to an automated strike zone, is there still going to be a home plate umpire, because you're still going to have plays at the plate?
Yes.
You're still going to have, and you might need a backup, like, oh man, the automatic strike zone went out. We need you to call if this was a ball or a strike. You're just going to sit there 90% of the game, but we might need you for a couple of pitches.
So I'm unclear on this. Is the technology calling balls and strikes? Because it seems to me what happens is the umpire is still calling balls and strikes, but if you want to challenge it, then we use the robot to challenge whether it's a ball or strike. But like, I'm unclear of this. I did like the umpire on Tuesday, that when they went to review, and then he announced that the call was surprisingly correct.
A little saltiness.
I enjoyed
from
that.
The umpire.
It was his call, so it wasn't. It was an actual, like, it's like only could happen in spring training, but I thought it was a funny move.
Yeah. So if they have the technology to call balls and strikes, why don't we just automate it? I mean,
maybe reaction time.
Like, I'm worried about AI coming for my job too. Like, I am.
I guess
AI
maybe
can probably already write better than me. But like, it's gonna happen. Let's just do it.
Yeah. It seems maybe the reaction time, like, it can't, like in tennis, we still use umpires, but we review, like, you go to Hawkeye for review, but it's not calling it in real time. Like, it has to wind it up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Siskin joined the program. We'll get his thoughts, Tigers, Grizzlies, and more. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Over at Zen Sports for the Tennessee-Alabama game, you can take advantage of the Parlay Profit Boost promotion. Make a qualifying three-leg parlay and earn a 25% boost up to $250. You can make up to three qualifying three-leg boosted parlays, but the maximum total parlay profit boost you can earn from the promotion is $500. Any other parlays of any other type made for your first three qualifying will not qualify for this three-leg. So you get the three, but it has to be within the time frame. The parlays can be used including two legs of NHL, NBA, NCAA men's basketball, or MLB spring training, plus one leg of the Tennessee-Alabama game. Odds on any qualifying three-leg parlay must not be less than minus 250 odds, so minus 251 will not qualify, minus 249 will. The minimum bet to qualify is $25 for this promotion. Parlay Profit Boost promotions will be awarded to your Zen Sports account within 24 hours as a promotional bonus after the bet is settled. Promotion cannot be combined with any other offer. All wagers are tracked during U.S. Central Time. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions do apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Wagers must be placed following the announcement of the contest. Odds are subject to change. Only accounts in good standing will be eligible. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Jason, how did you feel about last night's game? Because Cobb and I were discussing it. If you just watched the last 4 minutes, I agree with Cobb. The final score was not indicative of the game. I still felt like by watching the entire game, I kind of thought Memphis was like 12 points better. So I kind of felt like the final score indicated what my eyes saw, but I do acknowledge like they could have easily lost the game.
Yeah, I was a little bit more concerned than you. I thought that I had crafted texts and sent them to some, including John. I think maybe even Bennett was in one of those texts. What do you say about a coach who's done a great job up to this point, but has lost to Rice at home in two consecutive seasons? Like, how do we wrap our heads around that? And what am I going to say on my show today? Because that was a 2-point game with 2 minutes left. I mean, what are we talking about? It's very losable. At one point, Rice had made 15 of 20 shots in the second half. Your defense had turned off. And there were times where, again, seemed like you're helping them with the press. I thought Cobb made a great call. That pick and roll defense, and particularly on the one with Dane and Baraka, again, just more reason why I don't understand, I know why. Penny wants to play bodies so he can press defensively. That's his style. He talked about it with us. That's how him and Jermaine Johnson came up. It's the Memphis way. But it just felt like at times it was unnecessary last night. And yes, to the point that became a very losable game, you think about the damage it could have done. Thank God was my feeling afterwards, more so than, it felt like the Tigers had that the whole time. No, that was a dangerous game you were playing, and thank goodness for them. In terms of the damage they could have done to themselves, that Dane Danger stepped up, not just offensively there in those last 2 minutes, had the three big blocks. I mean, he was a man child there for them. The last 2 minutes was a good thing too, because as you've noted, that team couldn't buy a three last night. They were 2 of 13. You found a way to dig yourself out of it, in large part due to Dane Danger.
So fire me up, Jason, for this UAB game. To me, it feels like the highest stakes Memphis basketball game in quite some time. We got a conference title on the line. And I love Penny in the presser last night, sort of hyping it up. Somebody was kind of trying to ask him about, all right, well, how do you kind of coach Dane on the Yaxel-Lindenborg back and forth? And he's like, no, I love it. Like, I think it's great for the game when we got this showcase opportunity between the two preseason favorites in the conference. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this feels like as excited of a moment that Memphis basketball has had in conference play.
Well, bro, we got to hold on to something, right? In this AAC where you don't have a Dusty May at Florida Atlantic anymore or Kelvin Sampson in Houston. And so, I mean, yeah, for any game this season, this 18-game conference slate, this is the one you look at, in particular with, how close UAB is just from a conference standpoint. I'm not going to say fix things, but obviously when we saw them in non-conference, the team that was picked to win the conference, we said, my gosh, this might be one of the most disappointing stories in college basketball. They've righted the ship.
they and North Texas have done a North Texas more so to me a solid to impressive job in this conference. Again, it's behind you, but they're right behind you, and so yeah, it stacks up both in the conference race, Cobb. But then I think I'm so glad you touched on it. It's that individual matchup. It's the little bit of back and forth we saw after Dane and the Tigers destroyed UAB. What was it, 23 points? And for the most part, Dane outplayed Yaxel. And Yaxel kind of gave him a salute there. I think I don't have it in front of me in terms of that back and forth on social media. Kind of saluted him. I think Dane's was sort of, I didn't know he's preseason player of the year. So, but my point, more so than the back and forth and how they sort of respond, is that you've got the two best big men in the league, clearly. And is Dane Danger going to get the best of a guy that, listen, if he's not on that UAB team, if he's playing for Memphis, he's hands down your conference player of the year probably, because Yaxel's putting up huge numbers. And I think we're pretty certain there was interest on the part of Memphis in terms of trying to get him over. Yaxel stayed. There's that sort of storyline of things too. And obviously after getting embarrassed the way they did early on this season, you know, they're going to have a, I would think not just a sort of intensity in terms of the team, Andy Kenny wanting to come back and get this one, but I think the crowd too, because again, you're getting a, you know, for them too, you know, the one ranked team in your conference that you got a shot at. We get this to some degree from every team in the league, but obviously UAB is the preseason pick to win. Looking at Memphis on the other side, which proved it pretty, you know, I would say convincingly here in Memphis, they was the better team. You're going to get a pumped up effort from that crowd and that environment. We've seen it get nasty in there. It won't be, you know, go back to the Cal, Aaron Pierre, Henderson Niles having to slap a UAB fan. But I do think that atmosphere in there will be, you know, certainly a benefit to UAB. So, yeah, Cobb, it stacks up just because there's nothing else really in this AAC schedule that even comes close.
Are you buying that PJ Haggerty is getting an unfair whistle?
I think he's getting an overcorrected whistle. I think that's where I landed. I was sort of there, Jeffrey, and John and I talked through it, and I think you're probably right here with us that, you know, it clearly, and I said this on our show, I mean, P.J. Haggerty flails, and he doesn't do it occasionally. He does it frequently. And, you know, the official's response to that, the AAC's response to that seems to have been, we're not going to let you keep getting away with that. We're not going to keep rewarding you at times where you're not getting fouled because you flailed your arms and you're expecting one. Again, this is a guy who's gotten to the line all of his career. It's been a big part of his game. And so I'm sure these AAC teams, right, have complained about it and everything else. But what I think you've got now is sort of this anticipation he's going to do it, that it's not a foul. And I saw some of that last night. Now, you can't get too, you know, too caught up in the officiating last night. You end up shooting, what, a relatively even number of free throws, and when the foul's called, it ends up relatively even. But I do think with P.J. Haggerty, and particularly the way he plays his game, this is very important going forward for Memphis, both to finish out the regular season and then when you get to postseason play. Cobb's probably right that some of these officials that weren't a part of the, hey, y'all got to watch it on P.J. Haggerty, that you'll get, you know, come NCAA tournament time, hopefully. Well, they haven't seen him, and hopefully it'll be a, you know, there'll be less of sort of a tip-off. You know, and maybe we get some, I don't want to say honest officiating, but just, yes, less of an overcorrection and more of just what your eyes are seeing.
So we were debating it before the break. The flavor of the day right now in college sports seems to be general managers, especially on the football side, but even in basketball this week with North Carolina hiring Jim Tanner, longtime respected NBA agent. It's going to be Hubert Davis's GM. What about Memphis? It's an interesting situation when you got Penny Hardaway as your head coach. Do you think Memphis needs a general manager?
I don't know yet. And here's why I don't know. We knew, and Penny has made it, has talked about it, so this is not a secret. I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. But we knew that Rick Stansbury had a large hand in putting together this roster, last year's roster, but let's stick with this year. And a couple weeks before the season, you dismiss him. Now, I've told this, I've made this point to Jeff too. This is Penny's team, you know, but Penny decided to move on before the season from Tyreek Smith. He's the one that's had to continue to try to keep the chemistry going, right? So again, even if it seems to be facts, Rick Stansbury, you know, is heavily involved in putting together the roster. It's Penny's roster. He's moved on. That said, it feels like from everything we've gathered the last couple of off seasons, you relied heavily on Rick. he's sort of now, you know, in terms of the NIL and everything else, he's kind of, and again, this is an outside observer, not nearly as close as I was during my beat writing years, but he's kind of served as that, it's felt like. And so back to your point, back to your question, do I think Penny can do it? Sure. I think he can. Do you want to do it? Do you, because you've got so many other responsibilities, Cobb, you know this so well, as a college basketball coach, you got so much to do, it's year-round. Do you want to delegate that? And can you? Do you have the resources to do it? So if you do, I don't think it's a bad idea. If Penny wants to handle it himself, okay, let's see. Let's see, you know, add that to it. You know, again, you're talking about, all right, I got to have this much for Haggerty. I got to have this. Are we going to, hey, we're going to go after Johnny Lawson at Arkansas State. We're going to try to bring him back on. How much do you think we might need? You know, do you want to handle that? Or you want a guy that's sort of, hey, putting that together for you and then bringing it to you to have the final say? If you've got the resources, I don't see any reason why you don't want to do it, particularly when it does feel like, again, you've had someone not labeled as that. He was labeled as assistant coach, but someone who's sort of been handling those kinds of duties the last couple of off seasons for you that's no longer there.
All right, I wanted to pick your brain on this a little bit. So we got the news today also that the Memphis Grizzlies are going to have five games broadcasted, simulcasted on gray media. So that means Memphis, Nashville, Detroit. Yep. Knoxville. Beg your pardon, I don't know why I said Detroit. They're going to be on their property. So for if you have a digital antenna, it's 5.1 here locally. But the thing that I found interesting about it is I'm wondering if this is a trial balloon, because I wonder if tacitly this is an admission of, listen, we don't think FanDuel Sports, the Diamond Sports Group, or I think they've rebranded again, we don't think that's going to be around next year, and we're trying to figure out ways so that people can watch our games. What do you think's happening here?
It could be some of that. I would look first at what seems, and maybe this is too surface, and Lord knows I'm as square as it gets at times, but seems like to me they're just trying to maximize. Look at their attendance this year.
Yeah.
You're in one of the two smallest markets in the NBA. You're limited in Memphis. You just are. And so whether it's to Nashville, I realize Knoxville's going across the state, regionally, you need to get everything you can. So that, you know, it show Knoxville and Nashville. Nashville knows. They get enough news. And Knoxville should, too, by now. As many times as, you know, he's made national news. But show them who John Morant is, if they're not already watching. Where they can get it easy and cheap. You know, I mean, that would be. And then those folks, right, instead of you just depending on your city and your small market for an attendance that you need to increase, but you have a limited ability to do so, especially in a world where you have to push up ticket sales, right?
Yep.
Remember, I mean, poverty in the city is real. I think it's a smart move to widen your footprint regionally and hopefully get some of those folks again, man, drive in here on a weekend. You know, some of that. Now, obviously, there are TV motives. There's also money motives and getting paid, to your point. But I just think it's smart in terms of Grizzlies because you are limited in a small market. There's no question about it. And regionally, you do have an opportunity here. Because of where you're located. Nashville's a quick drive. You've got plenty of people doing that already. Like to get as many as you can, and hell, maybe a couple will make the drive from Knoxville. So I think it's smart on their part, probably both physically, you know, whatever they're getting for this, but also in terms of trying to take whatever advantage you can of how you're positioned here regionally.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy.
You guys take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go to Kalen DeBoer dropping this one. I get it, you're new here. I get it, you're new here at Alabama, but this one was rich. According to On3, having a more balanced playing field helps our situation. It allows us to get where it was at one point just a few years back, where recruiting is real recruiting, not just someone who's going to put in the highest bid. So he believes revenue sharing is going to make a more balanced playing field, more fair for Alabama.
Oh, poor impoverished Alabama. They just need all the help they can get in recruiting. I mean, come on. There's no money there to support football at all.
I just love how the referencing, like, the good old days of how it used to be. When you were winning all the bids? those days?
Actually, the NIL and the revenue sharing, even the playing field a little bit here, that's what we're seeing.
All right, my man, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
David Cobb of CBS Sports. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.